Let's talk first to Bruce Williamson, who's from Rail Future, which is an independent organisation campaigning for better rail services for passengers and freight. Bruce, good evening to you.
Good evening.
So, bearing in mind your brief, I assume you think there is a problem with the railways.
Yeah, there is a problem, undoubtedly, and there's plenty to do. I suppose to get to the root of the problem, you have to go back decades and decades and look at consistent underfunding for the railways. So, you know, under governments of all flavours. So you've got a huge backlog of maintenance, a huge shortage of capacity, a huge shortage of rolling stock, and the problem's just compounding. It's like turning around a supertanker. You know, you can't solve these problems overnight. And then add to that the fact that in the last 20 years or so, passenger numbers have doubled and they just keep going up and up and up. So the investment that we have is barely playing catch-up.
Yeah, so in terms of getting that investment in,
yeah.
Where would that money come from, though? Well, would that just have to be taxpayers? Would private companies put the money in?
Well, the private companies obviously would want to make a return on their investment. So, I mean, ultimately, whichever way you look at it, we have to pay for it. You know, you pay peanuts, you get monkeys, and the same is true in the railways. And our European counterparts, who have in many ways better railways than us, not exclusively, but, you know, you have these wonderful TGVs and you're guaranteed to get a seat and so on in France and Spain and so on, because they've invested and they've invested long term. And they see the return on that. I mean, it's not just the rail passenger who benefits from railway investment. There are environmental benefits because you reduce pollution, you get fewer congested roads because, you know, passengers are on the trains and not stuck in their cars. If you get freight on the railways, then you have fewer lorries on the road. Railways make a huge contribution to the economy. So investment in rail is, you know, it's very sound. It's good for the economy. And so that's why, you know, it's reasonable to get the taxpayer to pay for it.
Yeah, but I think, well, the point Mr. Corbyn's been making is it's not reasonable for the taxpayer to pay for it and then the operators to take a profit.
Yeah, I can see where you're coming from. I mean, to be fair to the rail operating companies, if you look at their profit figures, they sound quite impressive because they're in the millions. But as a percentage of the sort of the cost of running the railways, it's actually very small. They're running a pretty tight ship. But yeah, I mean, if you're of a left-leaning persuasion, it makes sense, I suppose, that you would rather not pay any money to a private company and have all that money invested in the railways or given back.
Would you have faith in that, though? I mean, I don't know whether you're old enough to remember British Rail, but... well, I mean, I've got a text just in here saying public ownership is not the answer in capital letters. I remember British Rail. It was horrendous.
One of the problems of British Rail, and this may sound bizarre what I'm going to say, is British Rail was actually very efficient, but it was starved of funds. So they were running a railway on a shoestring budget with this clapped out old stock. They weren't allowed to renew it. They weren't allowed to invest, as I've been saying. So that was part of the problem of British Rail. I mean, I don't think there's anything sort of fundamentally wrong with state ownership. It works well in other countries which have retained a state-owned railway. The East Coast franchise was renationalised temporarily, and that seems to have been a success story. But we have to... The thing is, we are where we are, you know,
So how do we stop people sitting on floors in trains and paying thousands for a season ticket and not being able to get a seat?
There is no quick fix, I'm afraid. It relies on long-term and consistent investment. What's really bad for railways is feast and famine. And, you know, and the railway has suffered from that for years and years and years. So we're in a little bit of a feast period at the moment. There is some very, very welcome investment going on, things such as Crossrail and the electrification of the Great Western Main Line, the Midland Main Line, and so on. But it's important that that investment continues. So when the Midland Main Line is finished, we carry on electrifying other lines, for instance, and there's a consistent new supply of rolling stock, because again, you know, the poor old franchise holders don't know whether they're coming or going because they're always being messed around, you know, about what rolling stock they can get.
Have we got room, though? Have we got capacity? Can we have longer trains, more trains, so that we can not be overcrowded all the time?
It depends on which line. I mean, there clearly is scope for that, but in some places the railway lines themselves are absolutely running at capacity and there isn't that option, you know. Again, long-term investment, you know, planning these things and doing them all in good time would result in alleviating many of these problems.
What about the unions? Do you think they're part of the problem? But they're very powerful in the railways, aren't they?
What, sorry?
They're very powerful in the railways. It's almost the last bastion.
I mean, you know, if you look at over the last 20 years or so, in the privatised railway, generally speaking, strikes have been fairly rare. Industrial relations have been very good, and it's strange that, you know, we seem to have a lot of strikes in the news at the moment. I don't know whether it's just coincidence. But this whole issue on the Southern Railway, for instance, that issue of drivers operating the doors, that has been resolved on other lines, on other franchises. So clearly it's solvable. I'm not going to take sides and apportion the blame one way or another. But, I mean, whether unions are too powerful or whether management is too powerful and it's evil capitalism is a debate that will run and run, and it's as valid on the railways as it is in any
but
other
But that thing about ticket offices, for example, and staff and a guard and so on, doesn't that sort of point towards the degradation of the railway? That when you're catching a train and you're standing on a large mainline station and there's nobody there at all, it doesn't give you confidence.
No, I absolutely agree with you. One of the things we're very clear on, we want that human presence must be maintained. You know, this crops up when you have things such as automated ticket machines, for instance, you know, because they can potentially take the place of a human, which is fine, but they have their limitations, and we think it's very important that human presence remains. Similarly, on trains themselves, although the role of guards or conductors, or whatever you want to call them, is changing, that human presence is very important, and it's very reassuring for passengers.
So, if we carry on like this, what's it going to be like? Is it just going to get worse and worse?
No, I think actually we've got to maintain that level of investment. So the investment will pay off, but it's a long-term thing. So we've got to keep the pressure on politicians to keep the investment going and keep the pressure on politicians about rail fares. The issue with rail fares is that they go up. There's two measures of inflation, RPI and CPI, and the RPI one is the higher. Guess which one they use to set rail fares? It's RPI, it's the higher one, whereas CPI, which is a lower figure and is widely regarded as a fairer and more accurate measure of inflation, and the government says it's its preferred measure as well, CPI isn't used for rail fares, and that's one of the things we campaign for. We think, you know, CPI should be the benchmark for setting rail fares, and if that were the case, rail fares next January would go up by just 0.6% rather than by nearly 2%, which we think would be fairer.
Bruce, thank you very much indeed. Bruce Williamson there, joining us from Rail Future.